A very good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for coming out so early. I really appreciate it. I'm from Scotland, as we say in Scotland, all right? And as you guys say here, morning. Okay, so welcome to my session. Favor the Bold, managing and deploying rock-solid Microsoft Azure security solutions. I didn't come up with the title. I'd just like to point that out, okay? It's basically my top 10, and it is my top 10 solutions that I think that are going to make a real difference to your business. So do come in, come and join us. I really appreciate it. Who am I? My name is Andy Malone. I'm an MVP in security and have been for a number of years, in fact, 10 years now. I'm also a Microsoft trainer for 20 years. You don't get that for murder. Well maybe you do here. Also, I'm an author as well. So I've actually written a book, and the second one is inbound as I speak. It's going to be part of a trilogy. I'm also in negotiation right now for the movie rights. So, and it's going quite nicely. I'm not a millionaire. I'm not J.K. Rowling yet, but we'll see. But it's basically Highlander meets the Da Vinci Code. I won't mention the book, okay? Okay, I'm from a wee town in Scotland called Stirling, if any of you have been there. And one thing that Stirling is famous for is castles, okay? So this is just one of our castles. This is a castle very close by where I live. It's called Doune Castle, D-O-U-N-E. Some of you may think that, hey, this looks familiar. This is actually Winterfell in Game of Thrones. And it was also the castle from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And it's also in the TV series Outlander. Okay, so if you're familiar with those shows, you'll be familiar with it. They film loads of stuff here, you know? And you're probably thinking, why on earth, Andy, are you talking about castles at Microsoft Ignite? Well, we're talking about data centers. And one of the things I've had the pleasure of in the last few years is working with Microsoft Office 365 and also Microsoft Azure. I've got to work with the actual product groups. I've got to work with the service people. So the people who take your calls on the service desk, I've spent some time with these guys. I've also spent time in the data center. And I was mentioning to a couple of folks earlier that it's kind of interesting here because the data centers that you've got in the US here, they're so vast, people ride around on these Segways. Did I say that right? Segways? Segways? People ride around on those things. In Ireland, where I work with the guys, they ride around on bikes, so they like to get fit, all right? So what do these things have in common? Well, this, if you think about it, is a 12th century data center. And they've not really changed that much. They're both responsible for protecting assets in their own right. Obviously, they're responsible for how data flows out of the data center. This is the actual data center in Ireland. This is the Dublin data center. Much of a muchness as with the other data centers, absolutely enormous. So this is one of the biggest data centers in EMEA. So, Andy, why on earth are you talking about data centers and castles? Because they're all comprised of these things. Isn't it amazing that in over 1,000 years, we're still building with bricks? All the technology that we've got, we're still building with the basic things. Yes? I was going to mention one of the events that I do is an event called the Cybercrime Security Forum, and I work with you might know a lady called Paula Uniskovich. She speaks here apparently at Ignite sometimes. She's quite popular, apparently. I got to tell you a funny story. She was actually stopped at immigration, and she was strip searched. Did you know this? This is true. This is true, yeah. I've got the video. I can sell it to you if you like, you know. Don't tell her that, okay? So, okay. So basically, I don't know if you've looked at Microsoft Azure recently, but it's a big beast, yes? And if you go away for like a month or something and come back, it's all changed. So you've got all of these kind of security features, and there's gazillions of them. Honestly, Microsoft Azure changes faster than I change my underwear. I'm not kidding. It's crazy. And I'm thinking, how on earth can I include all of this, throw this all at you, in like 75 minutes? And it's kind of almost impossible. So what I've tried to do is I've come up with, I think, Andy's top 10. Okay, so these are my top 10, and I'm going to cover it in all of these kind of areas. You may disagree with me. I know that, Andy, why didn't you speak about this? It was out yesterday. Hey, look, I wrote this event a couple of weeks ago, and I wanted it to be kind of relevant. And also, it's stuff that you can use now. You can use today. Let me talk about my number 10. My number 10 is, what was I thinking about? Okay? You'll know AAD Connect, yeah? Identity is an absolute core feature of Microsoft Azure. We all want to be friends with each other. But there's so many different identity models and mechanisms going around that I'm thinking, hey, you know, we need something in the middle. And I was actually looking at this, and I was having a conversation with somebody in the speaker room yesterday. Now, does anybody remember this? Who remembers this? Raise your hands. See? Respect. Okay? Respect. Okay. What are we looking at here? This is Exchange 5.5. This is what, 20 years ago? It is 20 years ago, right? And there was a file called DIR. Now, this is pure speculation, by the way. This is, please, the press, don't go and write this. I'll never work again with Microsoft, okay? This is speculation, but bear with me on this. I foresee a place in the not-too-distant future where you go into Windows Server, you go to Add Remove Roles, and you add Active Directory. But Active Directory is not installed. You connect to Azure Active Directory. It's cached in your machine. Work with me here, yeah? It's cached. There is no DCs. There's no domain controllers, but you have OUs. You can do group policies. You can do security. Is that beyond the realms of reality? I don't think so. And this is exactly where we were 20 years ago. This is this product. Yes? Because DIR.EDB connected Exchange, if you think about it, to Windows NT, right? Nowadays, what we've got is we've got some kind of intermediary technology. Now, whether we call it AAD Connect, whether we call it ADFS, whatever you want to call it, it's designed to connect your on-premises solution to Azure. We're back where we started. Is it great, isn't it? It's absolutely awesome. So, it's all about connectivity. It's all about identity, and it's one of the most exciting areas of modern times, really, to get into. So AAD Connect, now I'm sure you're going to see guys like John Craddock and Mark Racinovich. They'll talk about all of these products in great detail this week. I'm not going to bore you to death with that. Now, did you know, however, that AAD Connect has a secret? I've been working with Office 365 and Azure for a number of years, and this is something that's not commonly known. Now, if you were familiar with a product called DirSync, yes, which is all based on the same thing, you'll remember that DirSync originally synced every 3 hours. You could force what we call a delta sync, but the problem is I had a customer in Leeds, and that's in England, by the way. I had a customer in Leeds, and he says to me, I need to manually sync. And he had something like 100,000 objects, some huge number of objects, and he was forcing, he actually edited the text file so that it synced every 10 minutes. And of course, what's going to happen with that? It's not going to work. It's going to get corrupted. And that's exactly what happened. And if you know this tool, so you can go in here and you can edit this stuff, right? But what is not commonly known is actually this. This is the Active Directory Sync Manager. In AAD Connect. It's the same as it was in DuraSync and so on. Now, this is something that you don't know. There is actually a secondary sync cycle. There's a pulse. It's an undocumented feature, and it pulses every 2 minutes, okay? An undocumented feature. You can't edit it. You can't change it. But what it does is it looks at your emergency delta syncs, your password resets, your deletions, and things like that. So your critical syncs are taking place with this. Okay? That's an undocumented feature for you. All right? So that's my number 10. What are you syncing about? Now, I can feel the excitement in the room because you're sat there, you're thinking, my God, what, if that's number 10, what's going to be number 9? And I've got to tell you that my number 9 is identity. So identity is absolutely critical. But identity today is becoming a challenge. But on saying that, identity is actually starting to be dominated by the big few. So Microsoft, Facebook, Google, okay? And the only question about that I have as a security guy is, who's governing all of this? Yes, I like to know that governance is really important. Compliance and governance is really important here. But it's quite complex. So remember my picture of the castle at the beginning. In those days, what do you do if you're trying to get a message out? In Game of Thrones, of course, they'd send a raven. Yes? We can't send ravens, but we do it. Well, the modern raven is called SSL, right? Yeah, so we just hope that nobody shoots it down. So identity definitely has its challenges. So whether you decide to, hey, you know, we're all in the cloud, we want to move to the cloud, you know, we migrate, we're in, that's it. Or are you going to have some kind of intermediary solution? So very much like that dir.edb file that I mentioned. Something that connects your on-premises Active Directory to Azure Active Directory. Because let's face it, guys, Active Directory was never written for the cloud. It was written in a different time. Yes? It was written in a different time period. So now we need one of these intermediary technologies. Now, obviously, one of my favorite ones is Active Directory Federation Services. And I've got a little demo of Active Directory Federation Services. Now, this demo is not for the experts in the room. This is if you've never done it, okay? And also another thing as well, I'm going to do this demo on Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2. Why? That's because that's what customers ask me to do it on. What are the chances of you going onto customer premises and they're going to have Windows Server 2016 with the latest and greatest? There's no chance, right? So I wanted to make this demo a little bit more relevant. Now, some of these demos I've canned, mainly because you can imagine it takes a little bit of time to do this, and I'm a bit limited with time. So key thing, deploying federation services, this guy in the middle. So the thing about federation as well initially is federation was quite complex. You would never just install a single server because potentially that was a single point of failure, right? So what we do, we have a federation farm. And of course, it's not considered good etiquette to connect to directly to the server. So what do? We connect to the proxy. We have some kind of proxy, okay? So I've got my nice colleague up at the back there, Mary O'Shea. I'm making this up, okay. And she's going to help me out. Now, she's a bit slow sometimes, so you've got to bear with me, okay? So this is my DC1. And in DC1, what I'm going to do here is the first thing that I'm going to do, this is like right from the beginning, step by step. I'm going to go into my server manager here. I'm going to go into DNS, and you can see that in here, I've created a local DNS record for FS, Federation Server. Okay. Now that I've done that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into Active Directory Users and Computers. Of course, you don't typically use an admin account for this. So what I've done is I've gone and taken an account called ADFS Service or whatever you want to call it. Okay, so that's the first thing I've done. The third thing I've done is I've granted that user the right to log on as a service. So I've done the set SPN and so on, which you can see here if I flip over to my server 2. And you can notice this one is a 2012 R2 box. So what I've done is I've just run that command, and all of this will be available to you guys later, by the way. So now what I'm going to do is I'm flipping over TMG. Remember this? This is a real-world scenario. So I'm flipping over to a customer. They've still got TMG. And again, I'm just going into DNS, and I've just created an FS record with my public IP address here. Again, both sides of the coin. So now what I'm going to do, now that that's been set up, again, I'm just going to flip back, and I'm going to open up AAD Connect. Now, AAD Connect at the moment is awesome, by the way. It's come on such a long way. So I'm going to go into here, and you can see that I've already gone ahead and deployed sync. Yes, I've deployed the sync mechanism. So all I need to do, unlike the old versions where I needed to uninstall and reinstall, I can just click on, I want to change the login type. So it says, okay, you need to connect to Azure. So I'm going to log in here as my, this is my Office 365 account. Of course, the beautiful thing about Azure Active Directory is it doesn't matter whether it's Intune, Office, OMS, it doesn't matter. It's using the same directory structure here. I'm now going to, once I've connected to that, of course, now it says to me, all right, how are you going to change the user sign-in? What sign-in option do you want to do? So in this case, it's password sync at the moment. I'm going to go with ADFS. So I'm going to select that option, and I'm going to go ahead and click on next. Now, you can see it tells me here, by the way, although AAD Connect will install on 2012 and 2008 R2, you won't be able to run the ADFS part. So the ADFS part requires R2. So now what I'm doing is I'm just browsing to my certificate. So I've got a public certificate here. So I'm just going to go ahead. And I got to tell you, by the way, this is so much easier than it was like a couple of years ago, or as I call it, the days of yore. Okay. So I'm going to just load up my certificate. You can see I select my certificate. Remember this because ADFS requires SSL. So if you get an error on the screen, that would make a good exam question, wouldn't it, by the way? It means that you've not actually configured SSL. Now, which server is going to be your Federation server, so server 2 in my case here. So I'm just logging on with my credentials just to say, yep, I'm authorizing this. Okay, so now that I've done that, yep, I am going to just type this in. Okay, now it's asking me good best practice, of course, you would always put in a web application proxy, always. But for the purposes of this little demo, I can skip it, okay? But in reality, I would just also do this. And the wizard would actually take care of that as well. But just because of limited time, I didn't want to bother going through that. So again, I'm just going to click on next there. Click it. Okay, I told you she was a little slow. Okay, so now that we've done that, it now says, okay, now you need to put in your domain administrator credentials. So I'm just putting in here onprem/administrator, and I'm putting in my password. And again, I click on next. So now it says, what about a service account? Now the cool thing here is it says, okay, you can create one if you want to. Or, of course, I've already created one, so I'm just logging in here with my onprem/ADFS service or whatever you called it. Do remember, though, that you need to run that setSPN command in order to grant the permissions. So, now that I've done that, awesome. So, now it says, okay, for which domain is this for? Which forest? So, in my example, I'm only using a single forest. So I'm just going to click on the drop-down arrow, and I'm just selecting this particular domain here. All right, and again, it just says, make sure that you put in the correct DNS records, blah, 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 and then once you're happy with that, then we can click next. Okay, so looking good. Now it says, okay, it's going to use the synchronization engine as a backup. So it's going to do that. So I click next. And we're done. Okay, so installation is complete. I just quickly verify that. And that's it. We're now in Active Directory Federation services mode. Okay. Now, beyond that, there was absolutely loads of PowerShell. Okay. So if you would have been doing this a couple of years ago, that was quite a very large exercise. So considerably easier today. Now, as I say, Andy, why didn't you do that in Windows Server 2016? Because nobody's using Windows Server 2016 yet. Not for that, or at least the customers that I speak to, I wanted to make it real world. So Andy, we're talking about identity. That's what you said, right? So that was part of it. So now that we've made that connection, either by using the sync engine or ADFS, we've joined the forces together. But the key thing is, how many of you are on Office 365, by the way? Raise your hand. Ooh, quite a lot. That's nice. So one of the great things about Office 365, I mean, that's pretty much what you can do in Office 365, right? But the problem with that is there's so much more in Azure that will bring extra value to that. So we have a feature in Azure called Azure Active Directory Identity Protection. And this is basically where you can set up risk-based conditional rules, if you will. So you can identify certain users and actually say, well, you know that they're in a particular area that's quite risky, or you know that they're a risk. And you can actually say, okay, once you've identified those, you could actually set up conditions. So and it works a little bit like this. So this is Azure AD Identity Protection. So here's Bob. Bob logs on. And I don't know why he's sat on the floor, by the way, but there we go. Maybe he's feeling a bit lonely. Maybe he couldn't make it to the canteen here. I know that I can't. Bob signs in, and basically a number of processes takes place. So first of all, it logs the date and time. It logs his location. So where is Bob? Is he in an approved area? Is he in an approved location? So I do a lot of jobs with the military, yes? So of course, you know, things you might have access to in one room, you may not have access to in another room, right? So location can play an important part. Alarms, so something's not right. It might trigger an alarm, it might trigger an alert. So, you know, you're not in an approved location, so you might need to, let's say, perform a multi-factor authentication or something like that. Another solution, it will record everything. So everything is logged. Everything is audited. This is awesome stuff. And then finally, of course, it does that risk evaluation on you. So is this user in a risky location? Is this the user that they say they are? And of course, there's lots of metrics and charts and views and things that you can go and view. So this is Azure AD Identity Protection. So if you've got users in Office 365, flip over to Azure AD and have a look at it there. You can set all of this up there. It's so cool. So detailed reports on users with leaked credentials, whether it's an irregular sign-in coming in from an unfamiliar IP address, suspicious activity, and there's loads more. Oh, one little gotcha. It requires Azure AD Premium version 2. So this is the latest version 2 of Azure Premium, okay? But you can, of course, add that on. So now, when we flip over into the demo here, so you can see I'm going into this, and essentially what we have here on the left-hand side, you can see it says, okay, I've not set this up at the moment. So we can say, you know, which users are logged on. You can identify risk. You can say risk events. And again, it detects any potential vulnerabilities. So one of the first things we're going to want to do is, of course, kind of set it up. And the first thing you need to do is obviously say, okay, which users do I want to flag up? So you can obviously do all users. I can select individual users if I want to. So for example, if I go in here and I'll say, you know, do we have, let's say, Captain Jean-Luc Picard here, or I'm a big Trekkie, sorry. Or do we do like Chandler Bing? So for this example, I'm just going to click on all users. So once you've set the users, you can, of course, then set the conditions. And, of course, the conditions, you can then say, okay, if they meet these conditions, what are you going to do? Are you going to identify these users as potential, medium, low, high risk? And based on those conditions, you can then say, all right, what are you going to do with that? So I can then say, okay, if they are high risk or medium risk, you can actually say, I'm going to ask them to reset their password or maybe invoke multi-factor authentication, something like that. So, and that's it. That's all you do, basically. It's really, really simple. So once you've done that, of course, then it's just a case of reading the reports and reading the logs, okay? But the fact is that you're in control of it. Absolutely awesome. That's my number 9, okay? Identity is the new control plane. Okay, what about number 8? I can feel the excitement, especially at the back there. Somebody's jumping up and down. Number 8, hey, admin, just who do you think you are? So all of us, who remembers Windows NT? Oh, baby, I love you. Okay, so Windows NT, we were gods, weren't we? Yes, we ruled the world. Yes, but then they changed things. They put in auditing and things like that. So, number 8, hey admin, who do you think you are? So, do you remember this? Role-based admin control, RBAC, right? So, in the old days, things were simple. In the old days, you would be added to a group and then you would be granted permissions. Remember AGDLP and all of that? But what was the problem with that? The problem was that as time went on, you might be changed group or, and permissions would bleed like crazy. So a couple of years down the line, it's like you don't know what permissions this guy's got. So at least with roles, the idea is you can be one role or you can be another role. Yes, you can be one or the other. But, and this is where it gets really interesting. So that's it. That's pretty much what we've had for a while. But check this out. This is something called privileged identity management. This is awesome. Right? This combines something called JIA and JIT. So just enough administration with just in time administration. This is very cool. So basically what this essentially does, if you've got these minor roles, so let's say you're a password administrator, or you're a billing administrator, something like that. Well, what this does is I could say, hey, I want Bob to be a password administrator, but I'm going to just set Bob's account up so that when he actually clicks on activate, so he's maybe not working with the account right now, or he's maybe not doing that role right now, but when he clicks on activate, a timer kicks in. So let's say he's a password administrator, but you can put a time limit on it. Think how cool that is for like contractors and people like that. That's something we've never had. So just because you're a role-based admin, it doesn't mean that you should be a role-based admin permanently. So it basically sends out alerts. The idea is who are the numbers of users, so we can find out which users are what we call privileged users. But it also allows you as a global admin, as God, to basically look at those users and say, does this guy still require that right? Yes? Now, okay, if the contractors, of course, and they've used their privilege and it's timed out, you can just reset it again, okay? Again, it's so simple. Okay, so basically this is called Azure Active Directory Privilege Management. So again, the first thing you do is you basically identify your users. Again, here I've got a pretty simple setup. There's hardly any users here. But basically what I'm going to do is I'm just going to flip it over here and I'm going to go into Azure Identity Management here. Identity Protection, I should say. So Privileged Identity Management, again, I'm just going to enable it. Click into here, And again, one of the first things that you need to do is we need to basically identify which are our administrators. So you can activate the roles, obviously. We can then manage the roles. So we've got, obviously you've got the global admin, and you would never really put a time limit on a global admin role. You would tend to do this on one of the minor roles. So once you've set that, obviously once you've set up the monitoring, I can then say, okay, I want to activate this user as a potential temporary role. So if I've got Bob here, I can activate Bob as a potential temporary role. And the nice thing is you can go in, there's log files, you can see what Bob's up to, when he's logging in, you know, how long he's got. The reporting features here are really awesome as well. So once you've set that up, again, you can then obviously just enforce that. Once you've selected the user, you can then say, I want this user to be eligible. So he's, let's say, a guest administrator, a sales administrator, something like that. I want him to be eligible in the role. Okay, so these are all the different roles for, let's say, Azure, Exchange, SharePoint, Office 365, and so on. So you can basically identify the users in those roles. Okay, and then, as you can see here, I can then say, okay, activations, you can then say, okay, I'm going to give this guy 30 days. I'm going to notify them. And of course, you can do things like if there's an incident or a request. And you can also invoke things like multi-factor authentication for this user as well. This is a very, very cool feature, guys. You want to seriously take a look at this. Now, the thing about this is it's not actually in the likes of Office 365. So as a global admin in Office 365, I'd love to see it in Office 365. But the thing is you can bolt it onto it by going through the Azure portal because it's the same Azure Active Directory, right? Okay. So once you've identified the users here, you can see that that user is now earmarked as temporary. So once that user decides to activate their role, that's when the timer kicks in. Basically, okay? Really nice feature. Okay, so can I do this through PowerShell? Of course you can. So this is basically how to do it. You can either do it through the GUI and through PowerShell. Okay, it cannot be done in Office 365, but again, one of the things you need to do is you need to earmark or make an administrator eligible, and it must be a global admin role that does this. All right. Now, Andy, let's have a top tip. Okay, here's looking at you, kid. There's a new feature in Azure. Wouldn't it be nice to record what admins are doing? So, again, every single admin will be recorded. It goes into a log, and, of course, you can then follow that up. So if you do have rogue admins, which, let's face it, it does happen from time to time, you've got the auditing, you've got the power there to go in and enforce the rules. That's a really nice feature, by the way. Alrighty, so that's my number 8. I can feel the excitement growing. I think we need a drum roll. Number 7, then. Absolutely, it's amazing how many people don't use this at the moment. So what is multi-factor authentication? Multi-factor authentication is when you sign in. You know, as a security guy, I really have a problem with passwords. So, you know, you see speakers all the time or so-called security people all the time hacking passwords. And the crazy thing is that when they hack the passwords, they're actually logged on as an administrator. So, of course, they can get the password, okay? That's common sense. And passwords are like so 90s. Nobody uses passwords anymore. And you know why? The reason being is because that passwords only tell you something that you have and something that you know. So something that you have is you or a bank card, and something that you know is a PIN number. So what? That doesn't prove who I am. That just proves that I've got something and I know something. What we need is something that you are. Yes, or some other. So either prove who you are or somewhere where you are. For example, in the UK at the moment, do you guys use chip and pin here? Are they rolling that out here?
Yes.
Yeah. So we've had chip and pin for about 20 years in Europe. Okay? Long time. I'm sorry, guys. Okay? Okay. You've had better movies than we have, though. So, you know, touche. chip and pin, right? Again, something that you have, something that you know. But the bank machines now, the Royal Bank of Scotland in the UK, what they've done is you can now register your image with them. So when you go to a cash machine or you make a cash withdrawal, you put in the card, you put in the PIN number, but it does a facial recognition. How cool is that? So even if you stole my bank card, you can't get into it. That is awesome. Okay? So multi-factor authentication is absolutely really important. Now, how do we do this in terms of, let's say, I mean, Microsoft have been great at this. They've really led the industry here. I will take my hat off to them. So, you know, OneDrive, for example, most of their technologies, yes, so what? If I get access to your, let's say, your OneDrive account, what's the first thing it's going to ask me? It's going to say, okay, you're not logging in from an approved device. Yes? So yes, you know the username, you know the password, but you're not logging in from an approved device. Okay. So authentication, you can phone call, you can text message. There's an awesome mobile app, by the way, that you can get. Users can also choose how they want to log in. And again, it's really, really simple to set up. So you can do it through PowerShell, or you can do it like this through the GUI and just enable it for one or all your users. Now, just a word of warning here, don't enable it for everything. So every time that you log on, for example, to Office 365, it will do a multi-factor authentication. Make security usable, yes? Because if you don't make it usable, what happens? It gets brushed under the carpet, all right? Or the rug. Do you call it carpet here? I don't know. Anyway, so you can make the choice here, and that's it. I went ahead here and just put the slides in. I'm not going to go through these, but the step-by-step guide on how to do this through PowerShell as well. All right? So there we go. Now, Andy, what if I... Earlier, you showed me how to do ADFS. Is it possible to combine ADFS with single sign-on and multi-factor authentication? Absolutely. Check this out. You can download this tool, install it onto your Federation server, and now you can invoke multi-factor authentication, and it just locks in seamlessly, okay? So this is Microsoft Multi-Factor Authentication Server. Just bolts directly on to your ADFS server. Absolutely rocks, okay? Ooh, number six, okay. So we spoke about identity. We spoke a little bit about access. What about how do we protect information? Okay, how do we actually protect our information? Now, I don't know about you, but information has really changed. Now, I come from the UK, and what happened in the 18th century in the UK? Something that changed the entire world, okay? It was called industrialization. So the populations came in from the countries. We built factories, engines, technology, ships. And of course, we went worldwide with this. Okay? And America is a perfect example of that. Okay? We took that industry to the world. It was called the Industrial Revolution. And in that Industrial Revolution, what happened? In fact, if you think about it, the early years of computing was the Industrial Revolution. Yes? What happened? Client-server environment. You walk into your... You go through the factory gates in the morning. And when you get into the factory, you sit down at your laptop or your PC. Remember those boxes on the floor? Yes? You connect to your PC. You connect to the server. And what happens? You do your job. At the end of the day, you get up. And you go and they close the gates behind you. That was the Industrial Revolution, right? That's the way it worked. And on the left-hand side here, this is how we have traditionally shared out data. But today, look at the difference. Today we can't... some of you said that you work with Windows NT. I can't tell you how many people I've seen that still think in that time period. You have to move, okay? If you don't move, you're going to end up shoveling fries in McDonald's, okay? Which might not be a bad thing for some people, I don't know. Okay, so on the left-hand side is your typical kind of data flow from client-server era. But on the right-hand side is the way that data flows today. And the problem thing, the problem that alarms me with this is that, you know, we'll send an attachment. I'll send a file out in the attachment. Boom, I've lost control of that file. It's gone, right? As soon as you share something out there, boom, it's gone. So we need something to, it's like almost like a lasso. I'd love to see that, by the way, in the West. I'd love to see the cowboys and that stuff. Yeah. So we need to lasso that data so no matter where that data goes, we've got some kind of control to it. And that's what we're starting to see now. Yes? So this is something, and you might call it like almost like a social network. Yes? So we need a mechanism to kind of able to hook onto that data and pull it back. So, you know, just to show you, you know, my data's out there. My data is out there. But how do I, I'm just making this demo up as I go, by the way. So I'll go into Microsoft's favorite search engine. Oops, I'll never work in Microsoft again. Okay. Okay. And I'm going to type in an advanced Google search. So here's a favorite one, right? I'll go with membership list. Okay. So you can see I'm typing site.com. It's a com website, file type XLS, spreadsheet, membership list. And you can see, look at this. It pulls out membership. Okay. Now, do I dare open one of these? Because this is being recorded. So, oh, that's in Spanish. Okay, let's go with it. Let's open one. Okay, so here we have, for example, names, phone numbers, what they do. That's a social networking dream, is that? That's a social hacking dream. I mean, you could even do things like, let's say, PDF, mill. I can feel those rubber gloves coming on at the airport. Okay, and I'll say classified. Now, you'd think that nobody would ever post this, right? Look, all the documents marked classified. Okay? Now, even worse than that, so the problem is, as soon as you share something, as soon as you give a piece of data to somebody, boom, it's gone. You've lost control. Almost like if you post a picture of yourself. So, you know, how many folks are on social networks? Of course you are. You're all on, right? Everybody. Okay? You didn't put your hand up, so, okay, you must be shy. Okay. So I'm gonna show you a picture, all right? Let me load up a file here, just to prove that you really do lose control. So I'm gonna take a. I'm doing research for my next book. By the way, did I tell you I've written a book? So I'm gonna just find a picture here. Okay, here's a nice picture. One of the scenes in my next book actually takes place in Croatia, and I was doing some work in Dubrovnik. And so I took a picture of myself. So if I click on this, this is called metadata, of course. Metadata is data about data, right? So it tells me the device that it was taken on, tells me the exposure, the date, the time, the GPS coordinates, the altitude, the longitude, the latitude, and, the other thing that it shows me is it shows me exactly where I took the picture. Okay? Come on. Protect yourselves, protect your information. If that was pictures of your kids in the back garden, how creepy is that? Okay? We have to protect data from leaking outside an organization. Okay? So, what are some of the technologies that can help us protect our data? So, lasso that data and keep it in. Okay? So, I call it Azure, Microsoft calls it Azure Information Protection. And basically, this is our Wild West hero. So, the problems that we have today is permissions bleed. You share files, we attach files, and you basically lose control of those. Once it goes beyond the realm of the organization, it's beyond your control. Content can easily be copied, download movies, whatever. I never do that, by the way. So some of the mechanisms that we have here, you can set up classification. Now, this is nothing new. We've had this technology for a long time in Windows Server, file classification system in Windows Server. So you can attach, you can label documents as top secret or classified. We can encrypt files, of course, with technologies like BitLocker. You can enforce rights management, all of which you're going to get sessions here at Ignite on these topics. Rights management is actually a really interesting one because rights management, you just switch it on and it's really just an end user feature. So I can go into Microsoft Word here and I can say, don't share this document out with our organization. Now, it doesn't stop me or it doesn't stop you sending it out, but what it does, it's got that lasso on it. And it basically encrypts that document with a call home feature. And essentially what happens is, even if I try and rename it, change the extension of it, if I send it to you, it will always call home. It will come back and go, yeah, you know, we're outside, you don't have the rights to do this. Okay? A very cool feature. Available in Office 365, and it's also available in Azure as well as local versions. But check it out. If you're not using it, guys, oh my goodness me, it's a fantastic feature. So just enable it, switch it on, and from then on, it's basically an end user feature. So we can enhance this a little bit further as well with that kind of classification. So I'm going to go in here to Azure Information Protection. And in here, this is where you can start labeling documents. So you might put one in sensitive, secret, classified. You can classify as a secret document. You can switch it on. You can put in a little description for the user. And you can enforce it. You can change the color, red, green, amber, whatever. Now, if you are using rights management services, you can also enforce it on a template as well. So, again, that can really integrate brilliantly. You can put like a visual thing, almost like a watermark into the document as well. Okay, so I can select my color, my text, and that's it. Basically, you just set these labels up, okay? So really, really simple to use, okay? Now, of course, you can purchase this. I have no idea how much it costs, but you can add this on to the likes of Office 365. You can enforce it into Azure as well. So that's it. You just go ahead, and then I publish this label. So once it's actually published, so once you create the then you can create the labels. So I will then just you can set up a condition on it. So for example, I'm going to enforce this if somebody tries to put in a credit card number or a social security number, because the last thing you want is people sending credit card numbers across. It's almost a little bit like data loss prevention policies, almost. Okay, so again, once you've set that condition up, you can then just, that's it. I have now said, okay, I'm going to do another one, and then you just click OK, You can specify how many occurrences are you going to allow. Of course, obviously, things like a credit card number, you would never allow that. And it's all, they call it information protection. I like to call it preventing information bleed outside of your organization. But the thing is, it's so simple to set up. Okay, so once you've set it up, this is basically what it looks like. So in the likes of Microsoft Word, you get these labels across the top of the screen here. So then the user, all the user needs to do is just simply classify their document. And again, if it's tied in with rights management services, it takes care of the rest. Okay, excuse me. Again, this is my top 10 features. Okay, not Microsoft, this is mine. But I honestly think that these will make a real difference in security. It's all about keeping that lasso on that data. Microsoft have got this thing as well, you know, OneDrive, yes? They call it modern attachments. What the heck is a modern attachment? A modern attachment is where you don't attach the file, you attach the link to the file. Because by doing that, you're not actually sending the file to somebody. So by doing that, you've already got control because you've set permissions. So they've only got access to that file if you've set the permissions up. That's a great feature, by the way. Oh, who uses VMs? Who uses virtual machines in Azure? Yeah, okay. I am not going to show you how to set up a virtual machine in Azure. You know how to do that, right? Come on. And there's like sessions here galore. So this, my number five is called Rage Against the Virtual Machine, okay? And what do we mean by that? So virtual machines, this is the marketing, highly scalable, highly elastic, multi-OS support, including Linux. I'm sure if you go down on the show floor, they'll tell you how marvelous all of this is. But on saying that, there are a few issues, right? Now, the problem is with virtual machines, you tend not to treat them like physical machines. So you've got things like managing oversight and responsibility. So who's responsible for these VMs? Now, whether you use Microsoft or whether you use another vendor, the principles are the same. What about compliance? So again, that's a really, really important area. Patching and maintenance. People often forget, we need some kind of automated method to ensure that virtual machines, remember, it just takes one. The fact that it's on your network or has got access to your network is just as dangerous if it was a physical machine, right? So patching and maintenance. Visibility and compliance. Compliance is so important. So this year, the European Union have just enforced something that has rippled around the world. Yes? And America has got to absolutely, we conform to it. This is one of the reasons why we're seeing data centers in Germany, and just last week, a couple of new data centers in the UK. Okay? Because a lot of countries around the world have said, yeah, you know, this is great, but our data cannot go out with our country, like the US. Your financial data cannot leave the borders of the United States, and quite rightly so. Okay. Other areas, VM sprawl. This never happens, right? and finally, managing virtual appliances. Okay, and of course, so it's virtual networking. All the security involved with that. So, Windows Server 2016. One of the great features of 2016 is that you can now raise shields. So, obviously, if I've got virtual machines in a data center. Yes, okay, you're protected, but what's to stop me just siphoning off a copy of those VMs? Thanks very much. And hacking into them, right? And let's face it, once you've got the physical machine or a virtual machine, you can hack it, right? So once you physically have the item or the VHD, you can hack it, okay? So, I mean, anybody who tells you otherwise is crazy. But what we have here is Windows Server 2016 has this feature called the Host Guardian Service. Absolutely awesome, by the way. Okay? And there's Windows Server sessions here this week that will explain all about it and go and check it out. It's absolutely awesome. But this is a fantastic feature. And it prevents that from happening. So even though an administrator has your virtual machine, there's nothing they can do with it. Okay? It's yours. Okay? Just Andy's top tip here, by the way. I deliver classes on Office 365. Now, Office 365, great. I can just go into the portal, sign up, boom, I get 30 days free. It's amazing how many people don't try Azure virtual machines. And the question is, because you've got to put your credit card in. Rubbish. Yes, you have to put your credit card in, but it's only for identity. Okay? They don't bill you unless you click the button to convert it to a paid subscription. So you can have as many subscriptions as you want, by the way. Now, be careful, though. There is a gotcha here. Okay? You can only have one subscription per email address. So the way around it, just go ahead and create yourself an Outlook.com address. Yes? Perfect. Okay? So, and you get $200 free. Now, Andy, there's got to be a gotcha about that, right? There is a gotcha. So, but watch this. Now, if you go into the Azure Marketplace, this is beautiful. You can try virtual machines from all over the world and different companies. I got to tell you, though, this is a true story. One of my friends, signed up to a vendor who will remain nameless, but a very famous vendor who had a prominent virtual machine environment, actually, which is visible in this slide. I'm not naming them. Okay. And get this. He signed up for the Azure test. And when he forgot to switch the virtual machine off, he ended up with a $17,000 bill. I know what you're thinking. Wow. And there's no mercy with these babies. Anybody done Azure? Yeah, you know, you leave the virtual machine on, and you go, I left the virtual machine on. They go, so? Yeah, so be careful. However, I was having a very nice conversation yesterday with the Azure Marketplace people, and I was speaking downstairs about this very same subject, and what they're now saying to me is there's a whole bunch of these vendors that will allow you to have the free trial, okay? Not all of them, and incidentally not the one that charged my friend $17,000, okay? So go to the marketplace and get the information, otherwise you'll be stiffed, basically. All righty. Oh, I can feel the excitement. Oh, number four, how are we doing for time? We're good. Okay, I wish I could be secure. I wish I could be compliant. Compliance is so important. I've spent time on the ground in a Microsoft data center with the staff. I spent a month on the ground with Anatea. You cannot appreciate how secure these places are. Physically, it's almost impossible to get in, okay? So once you are in, they use a multiple redundancy model, as you know, okay? Do you know that there's only maybe 12 staff in an entire data center? Really small staff. And if you work in a data center, I have no idea what data is in there. No idea, okay? I don't have access to that, okay? So I don't know whose data is there. All I know is that Microsoft have over 200 services, and from Microsoft IT, Xbox Live, Azure, Office, all of those, yes? I have no idea what data is in there. Now, I will tell you one thing, though. When you actually get physically through, and you get into the security area, and you get given your job card, he gives you the job card, and he says, right, you need to go to room 131. You need to pull rack 40 and change a board or do something. Okay, so I'll go, yep, no problem. They give you a geo-tagged key. There are at least 3 cameras on you at any stage. Okay? So you go to room 131. You open the door. If I opened 130 or tried to go to 132, it's immediate dismissal. If I go up to a different rack that I'm supposed to, it's immediate dismissal. In the data center, in the rooms, the data is separated into non-PII and PII, personally identifiable information. If I walk into the area of PII, and I wasn't supposed to be there, it's immediate dismissal. If I take the key off premises, it's immediate dismissal. They do not mess about. I'm telling you, they're serious dudes. Okay? Think military type level. Okay? They even have machine gun turrets. No, they don't. I'm just kidding. Okay. Free and paid services are stored separately, and we also have something called a customer breach notification policy. So if your data is breached, you will be notified and compensated for it. Okay? Which is awesome. So, compliance. Whew. It's a minefield, baby. Absolute minefield. So, again, we have the Office 365 Compliance Center, which is absolutely awesome. Let me just show you this. So, if I just flip over here, and then just go into here, and I'm just going to go into the Compliance Center here. So if you work, let's say, with medical, pharmaceuticals, financial, legal, whatever, and you are a consultant, and you are trying to sell a cloud service, it's a hard sell, right? It can be a hard sell. So what we have here are, there's basically a whole set of tools. Now, depending on the SKU that you've signed up for, so enterprise, business, whatever, will determine the functionality of what you get. But basically what we have, you can set permissions, you can see the security policies, things like device management. So in my portal here, I've got Intune hooked in. And basically what these are, by the way, these are kind of shortcuts into the actual main product. So it's kind of one place where I can come in here and I can actually set all of this up. So you've got things like, you know, anti-malware, anti-spam, of course, my DKIM for in Exchange. Data management, you can import stuff into Exchange. You can export it out. This is your data, right? You can export it out at any time. You can archive data retention policies, data loss prevention. You can search and investigate, auditing, e-discovery. And I love this, by the way, service assurance. So we have this thing called the Service Assurance Dashboard now. And you can say, okay, if I go into settings, what region am I in? So again, I'm in the UK, let's say. Let's say I'm working in banking and financial. So I save that. And then when I go into the compliance reports, these are relevant for my industry. I can give these to my customers to prove that their data, when it's stored in 365, is absolutely rock solid, right? Absolutely fantastic feature, by the way. So rather than trying to play around with all the different tools in Exchange and SharePoint, you have one location to manage everything. And this is the Compliance Center in Office 365 here. Okay, so just flipping back again, let's just have a quick drink here. We're doing good. We're doing good for time. We're doing good. Okay. So, number three. Oh, it's getting exciting. This is number three. Cloud forensics. Okay. I'm a forensics guy. Okay. I'm digital forensics. I've been working with forensics for a number of years. And, of course, you know, you're probably thinking, well, what is digital forensics? You know, digital forensics is actually not that old. It's actually fairly recent. But obviously, it's about the science of, as it says here, identification, examination, collection, analysis of data. It's evidence that I can use in a court of law, potentially. So whether you think that somebody is pilfering from your organization, maybe somebody's downloaded inappropriate content, again, we have to somehow gather that evidence. But apart from that, things like putting things on legal hold and so on, a lot of companies maybe just want to do that just to make sure that their data's not deleted, right? So there's a whole bunch of reasons why you would do this. Now, of course, this varies greatly where you are in the world. So, for example, in Norway, I work a lot in Norway, and they have pretty stringent controls about who and how data is stored. In other places like Cyprus, for example, it's actually illegal for you to do any kind of digital forensics other than law enforcement. Okay? In fact, you could end up behind bars on that. So digital forensics, but the world has changed. And you think, oh my goodness me, we've gone to the cloud, I've lost control, where is my data? I've got no control on anymore. And actually, it was probably on this very stage at TechEd a few years ago that I actually sat with Mark Rasinovich and Mark Manazzi and Paul. We had a discussion about cloud security. And we were all very skeptical at that time. Do you remember a few years ago, everybody was skeptical of it? But I tell you, the world has really changed. So, and the question is here, surely it's become harder. Forensics has become harder. Actually, no, it's actually become easier, okay? Because if you think about it, what have you got? You've got virtual machines, shrink-wrapped crime scene. It's there for you. You've got things like, you know, I just mentioned OneDrive for business. You know, the user's got to log in with a device. Okay, when the user logs in, we know who you are, where you are, what time of day it is, and so on. So you've got things like the Cloud Security Alliance, the growth in platform identity, and Microsoft are really doing very well there. But of course, it's also where your data is. So when you save data, it goes to a hard drive on the server. Of course, it's backed up. You get dual copies of it. And it's also mothered off to a partner data center. And you get backups and you get recycle bins. So the thing is, at any point, there are at least 10 copies of your data. So again, if I just flip over into my Windows 10 machine, so I've got a Windows 10 here, just to show you how forensics tools are adapting. So this is a tool called Passware Forensic. And check it out. If I just go back, let's just go back here. So obviously I can decrypt full disk encryption, BitLocker for example. I can, and you've got this area, mobile and cloud forensics. So I can recover an iPhone, you know, apparently that's quite popular with the NSA. I can do an iCloud backup, Android. I can recover from an Android image, a Windows phone image, a OneDrive image, a Dropbox image. So I don't actually need access to your data anymore. Your data is stored centrally. I don't need access to a physical device. Okay? So that just shows you how things are changing. Okay, so cool. And incoming, by the way, we have these forensics tools coming into Microsoft Azure in the not-too-distant future. Number two, my nuggets of gold. So now when we choose in the data center, for example, Office 365, we can choose where we want our data to be. I mentioned JIT and JIA. So now when you share a file in OneDrive, you can put a time limit on it. That's awesome. The customer lockbox scenario. So when you phone Microsoft support, Microsoft, you know, they basically have to say, hey, you know, they just can't access your account. It needs to go to a manager who then approves it, and the invitation is then sent back to you to approve it, to approve the user's access. And it's only time limited. It's awesome. Documentation, Azure documentation. Yuri and Thomas have done a fantastic set of documentation for Azure security. So just go to the Microsoft Azure homepage, look at the documentation there on security. It's absolutely awesome. PowerShell.office365.com, fantastic examples of scripts and so on. Another tip. Sign up for the Microsoft IT Pro Cloud Essentials program. It's free. You get loads of free stuff. I'm from Scotland. Believe me, nobody does free like me. Okay. So, Andy, number one. What's my number one? Okay. My very own security center. Wonderful, Microsoft. This is absolutely awesome. So it helps you, again, if you've got virtual machines, you can prevent, it's a preventative tool, you can detect potential problems, but it also allows you to respond as well. So looking at this, you can see basically I've got a virtual machine running here. So I go into the virtual machine, I can see the policy. Let me set up a policy. And so you can see, I can set up a prevention policy. I can do email notifications. So I'm just choosing which location it's going to be in. And it says, okay, what do you want it? Do you want it to deploy antivirus? Do you want it to make sure that the firewall is enabled? SQL auditing? Do you want all of these preventative tools enabled? So once you set this up, it then deploys these things to your virtual machines, okay? So you can then set up email notifications. So for example, if antivirus is out of date or finds something, it will send an email notification to you, okay? And of course, we have multiple pricing tiers as well. So each of the pricing tiers, it will determine how much information that you want to pull out. Some of it is absolutely awesome. So again, you've got real, kind of real-time information on auditing here. Okay. Again, I'm kind of running out of time, so I apologize. So there you have it. That's my top 10. My top 10 of tools and features that I think are going to make a real difference to you. Now, question. Did I mention my book? Okay. So, under the seats... Under your seat, there is one of these. There are two going around, okay? So there are two of these, okay? If you can find it, then look at them scrambling, okay? Actually, there isn't one. No, there is, really, there is. Okay, there are two copies. I will sign these, and these are for you, okay? Okay. I'll give you a clue. It's not under the front row. Okay? There's one over here somewhere, and there's one over there somewhere. All right. Right now, here is the trailer for my book. Volume, please. Do we have any winners? They're there. There's two copies. No? You got one? Awesome. Give him a round of applause. Well done. There's one here. No? Nobody got it? Okay. Oh, well. I'll give it away. I'm doing a session this afternoon in Theatre 2, so I'll give one away there as well. Okay. I'm Andy Malone. Thank you very much.